Genesis chapter 41, beginning at verse 37, where we read, "And the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants." Now, of course, the thing that was good is that which has precipitated from out of what we read in the beginning of this chapter. So if you're familiar with it, then this would certainly make more sense, but we will comment on it as before we move into the bulk of the message. Our message today is the exaltation of Joseph. So to continue reading, "And Pharaoh said unto his servants, Can we find such a man as this, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, For as much as God has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, See, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand and put it upon Joseph's hand and arrayed him in vestures of fine linen and put a gold chain about his neck. And he made him to ride in the second chariot which he had. And they cried before him, Bow the knee. And he made him ruler over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without thee shall no man lift up his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneah, and he gave him to wife Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On. And Joseph went over all the land of Egypt. And Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. And in the 7 plenteous years, the earth brought forth by handfuls. And he gathered up all the food of the 7 years which were in the land of Egypt, and laid up the food in the cities, the food of the field, which was round about every city, laid he up in the same. And Joseph gathered corn as the sand of the sea, very much until he left numbering, for it was without number. And unto Joseph were born 2 sons before the years of famine came, which Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bare unto him. And Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God said, He hath made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. And the name of the second called he Ephraim, for God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. And the 7 years of plenteousness that was in the land of Egypt were ended, and the 7 years of dearth began to come, according as Joseph had said, and the dearth was in all lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. And when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. And Pharaoh said unto all the Egyptians, Go unto Joseph, what he saith to you, do. And the famine was over the face of the earth, and Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold unto the Egyptians. And the famine waxed sore in the land of Egypt, and all countries came into Egypt to Joseph for to buy corn, because that the famine was so sore in all the lands." And may God bless the reading of His Word. Now, of course, we witness another providential move in the plan of God in Joseph's life, or in Joseph's rise to power. But we would do so with the caution that a misapplication could easily be made as to what was occurring here. All being in the control of God's timing, Joseph is still in prison at the outset of this chapter. but is elevated to the second highest authority in the land in a noticeably short period of time. Now, I made the statement here concerning the misapplication, and this is something, and I received a great deal of hope, or of help, I should say, reading from Bodie Bauckham's little booklet on Joseph, but there were some things to be pointed out. How easily it would be to make a movie out of this. It probably already has been movies made of it, because this is your typical rise from insignificance to great power. And the way that it comes about, obviously, is we watch Joseph from being the shepherd boy in his father's house and being one certainly in a favored position in his father's house, but then suddenly to find himself cast into a pit, and from that time was never to return unto his land except for the burial of his father. And when indeed then the move was from there to a place of some prominence in the household of Potiphar, but then from there to prison through no fault of his own, and there to languish in prison for a period of time. And so we see the story. It's the things that dramas are made of and mysteries are written about, and people are fascinated as they read this type of thing, because of the fact here they make it to be about Joseph, and they would have Joseph to be a hero in this. There is no question that Joseph found grace in the eyes of the Lord, as did Noah and as did many others. But the fact is that the focus here is not so much upon the rise of Joseph as it is on the reason for the rise of Joseph. Because the fact is, it would be easy to see the success of Joseph as being about him and his faithfulness, when it is actually about God placing his servant where he would have him to be for purposes yet to be made evident both to Joseph and to others. And yet, we know the end of the story, and so therefore it's kind of, it's always rewarding to read anywhere in Scripture, because we actually know the ultimate outcome as far as Scripture is concerned, and that is Jesus manifest the victory that he claimed at Calvary's cross, and therefore will be glorified in the sight of all. So Joseph's story could, as I've already said, make Joseph the hero in a fairy tale. But our attention is rather directed to the outcome of his being there. And so this we will look to, even as we will continue in subsequent messages about Joseph. And so we would not, however, fail to notice the faithfulness and the example of the man. Joseph is, in his character, is to be imitated. There is no question about it. And it's not so much that in saying what I have just said that I would take anything from Joseph and from what God manifested in the life of Joseph, so much as I would simply call attention to that overruling providence and the power of God to bring about that which he has purposed. So therefore, what we witness in the life of Joseph is not the story of Joseph's success as a reward for his faithfulness. It is rather the display of God's redemptive work wrought out and typified in Joseph. Now, I say it's wrought out because through this, he was able to deliver his family, put them in the position where ultimately the prophecy that was given to Abraham would be brought to pass, and the Lord's people would be delivered out of Egypt. And it's important that we understand that, because I'll just say this at the outset, though I may have come across it again in the course of this message, that Egypt is a type of the world. It's a picture of the world. And we'll see some of this being manifested even here with what took place in Joseph's rise to power. But the fact is that what had, of course, taken place, and we know the story, Pharaoh has a dream. And Pharaoh's dream he sees seven healthy cows and then sees seven skinny, ill-favored cows come up and devour the healthy cows. And he also sees seven ears of corn that were very healthy and very prosperous to be devoured by seven that were poorly favored and were wasted by the wind. And so, having seen those, it troubled him. All the wise men in Egypt could not answer that question, could not resolve what Pharaoh had seen in that dream. It's at this time that we witness the providence of God here in operation, because at that time there was a man, and in chapter 40 we will remember that Joseph was occupied a time in prison, and don't know exactly how long, but we do know that it was more than 2 years, for the simple reason that he was there, elevated to a place of responsibility, was put in charge of the prison, so to speak, and obviously his administrative powers were something that was quite important. But having done that, he was also in there with two of the king's servants, which were the butler and the baker. Both of them had dreams. And so this is the third set of dreams that Joseph had dealt with. If you recall, he had two dreams while he was still in his homeland, of the sheaves bowing to his sheaf, of the sun, moon, and stars bowing to him. And so he had seen that. Now he had interpreted the dreams of the butler and the baker accurately, one of them being restored to power or to his place of service, and the other being hanged in accordance with Joseph's interpretation. And so it's at this point that the butler, hearing of the dilemma of the king, says, I remember my sins. He was serious about it. I remember that I was put in prison and that there was a man in there. And he recounted to Pharaoh what Joseph had done, what he had told him. And so at that point, they bring Pharaoh in. And so the fact is that we think then of remembrances of the past and what Joseph had experienced. I've already reviewed some of that. The interpretation was of that which was soon to occur. This he told him. Told him about seven good years, followed by seven lean years. The fact that it was done twice indicated that God was going to do it very shortly. So all of the things in accordance with what he said. Joseph didn't stop there. The wisdom of Joseph included his advice to Pharaoh that he needed to look out somebody to take over. What they needed to do was to take the fifth part of the prosperity of the good years and lay it up in store against the 7 years of famine that would follow. And so it was in those 7 years that the abundance was such that I would say that even though we think, you know, the fifth part. So if you took the fifth part of each year, at the end of that time, there would only be enough for 1 year. Or for 1 year and for, well, for 7 years. It wouldn't be for the full 7 years. However, the prosperity was so great that by taking a fifth part of it, not only were they able to supply the needs of Egypt when the time came, but they were able to supply other countries coming and seeking food from them. And this, of course, sets the scene for the appearance of Joseph's brethren. And so that appointment needed to be of one to lead the effort. And so what we read here at the beginning is Pharaoh's thought, this is good. This is good advice. And the very next conclusion that he comes to, and here we have the rise to power of Joseph. And the immediate reaction, of course, was agreement. And there was agreement among his servants that it was a good plan. And so the question was raised as to who. So came the recognition that Joseph was the man, that God had shown him all. And when he acknowledged in God, and Joseph never failed to observe the hand of God in all of this. And even so, that which we must do and all that befalls us. Joseph here again sets us a good example, and God would have his name to be known even in the face of Pharaoh, a heathen king. He was one who thought himself to be a god. That was part and parcel with the religion of Egypt. So for him to acknowledge God in that sense, there could be no question that he was bowing, as it were, to the wisdom and discretion. He was the man for the job. And so he chose him. Both authority and prestige were given to Joseph. And it's interesting to note here to what degree that took place. And I would think here that of the fact that Joseph was 30 years old, and we know of another king, another one of authority that was 30 years old, he was not received by the world. He was rejected. He came into his own received him not. And yet here in this situation, Joseph is elevated to power, but not apart from the purpose of God. The ring of authority, the fine linen garments, and the vestments that were put on Joseph. All of these are significant of something here. The fact is that Joseph was a Hebrew, and that being in that situation, I think we'll note someplace along the line that in that rise to power that he shaved himself. And this, for he knew that as a bearded man, he would be unacceptable to the Egyptians, who were the ones that, I think, invented shaving. And so, as you can tell, I don't agree with it. But in any event, the fact is that he was brought in. He was arrayed in the royalty of an Egyptian. Joseph was being to be identified as an Egyptian. And so we note, first of all, the ring. And this was the signet ring. This was the ring that the king used to show his authority. It had an emblem on it of some kind. When something, some document was to be presented under his authority, they poured hot wax, the ring was impressed on it, and that seal signified the king's authority. He delegated that power to Joseph. That is real power. He had authority that could easily have gone to his head. It was something could have easily set him apart. Now, the garments and all of this, we compare those linen garments and all emblems of his royal position, and that he was made to ride in the second chariot. And so, again, authority and prestige were given to him. We at this point would compare the coat his father had made. And he did so to honor Joseph, to identify him in a particular fashion, to manifest the love of his father upon him. And of course, with the manifestation of that love, it was the same coat that where Pharaoh is here putting the garments of Egypt upon Joseph, his brothers ripped that garment of love from off of Joseph and used it, tore it up, used it as evidence to suggest that he had been killed and presented it to his father. Those brothers were something else. And so, these were the same jealous brothers that resented the dreams. And so they'd cast him into a pit while Pharaoh had made him to ride in the second chariot. His rule in Egypt was all but absolute. Now, this is something of, again, of significance. The name change. He is given an Egyptian name. And this is not unusual as far as name changes were concerned, because they were done for significance. But it was not, the meaning is unknown, but it was not a Hebrew name. But we would be reminded that Abram's name had been changed to Abraham, for he was to be a father of many nations. And that Jacob's name was changed to Israel, because he, as Israel, he was identified as a prince with God. But this was to claim him as a captive of Egypt. And remember three others. Who knows who Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah are? Okay, I saw one hand get raised. Now who knows who Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are? Oh, now everybody knows that. But those were Babylonian names. Their names were changed to place the significance of Babylon upon them rather than to recognize their Hebrew names. Even Daniel's name. You know what Daniel's other name was? They named him Belteshazzar. And so the fact is that these name changes were not without significance. And so all the efforts here are to bring Joseph to it, to be identification as being an Egyptian to the Egyptians, and so he would function in that way. And so you say, okay, what's the big deal? Well, the big deal is simply that the world is going to have you look like the world. The world is going to want you to walk like the world. The world is going to want you to dress like the world. It's going to want you to do all the things in according with that. And when indeed one came and walked among them, and he did not act as they acted, rather he manifested the righteousness of God, he and all of his true followers were rejected out of hand. But here Joseph is brought into a place of acceptance. What is to be noted here that in all of this, Joseph is still a slave. And that, wait a minute, you mean he didn't give him his freedom? No, he did not. And we'll see what Joseph thought of that situation a little later along the line, in just a few moments. But to understand this, that when he was sold into slavery, he was subsequently sold to Potiphar, and thus he was the prisoner of Egypt. He was brought out before Pharaoh as a prisoner. And make no mistake about it, the world's claim upon us. And notice, if you will, you are not of the world. If you were of the world would love its what? Would love its own. You cannot serve two gods. You cannot serve God and serve mammon. And the idea of an enslavement one way or another is there. Joseph at this point was at least outwardly the bondslave of Egypt, even though he was elevated to that place of power. And so Jesus Christ came into the world, made himself subject to many things in the world, but he manifested clearly that he was not of the world and that his kingdom was not of this world. It is a wife was appointed to him. Again, an Egyptian. And we recall the determination of Abraham that his son Isaac would not marry one of the Canaanitish women and sent his trusted servant to get his bride from one of his people, one of the same descendancy. And so it is. He was not where he belonged. He was not where he desired to be. You think, wait a minute. This is the stuff that dreams are made of. I'm out wandering around in the desert taking care of sheep, and now look at me. Even though it's been a hard, circuitous path that I have traveled, look at where I am now. I've got the world at my feet. I can dictate to nations. I can partake of whatever wealth and riches that I want to of this world. But you'll hear something in just a moment. All succeeded according to plan and prophecy under the hand of Joseph. And to all appearance, he was at the height of success. Now, again, when I say according to plan and prophecy, this was exactly the way it had been laid out in the dreams. This was exactly the way that he had interpreted it. Now it was coming out exactly the way it was supposed to be. And so there it was. So it becomes evident then from our reading that the seven plenteous years, the earth brought forth by the handful, by handfuls. And he gathered up all the food of the 7 years which were in the land of Egypt, and laid up the food in the cities and the food of the field, which was round about every city. And Joseph gathered corn as the sand of the sea, very much, until he left numbering, for it was without number. And then we come to a break, because he said here, and unto Jacob were born two sons before the years of famine came. We talked about names a while ago. It is evident that we gain understanding as to Joseph's assessment of the situation. It is significant that while he had been given an Egyptian name, he had been given an Egyptian wife, he had been put in Egyptian responsibility, his children were given Hebrew names. And at that point, we might recognize that he is not abandoned. He has not lost sight of who he is and what influence he must have in the preservation of the Christ line. Joseph understood what the covenant had been, and he knew that through those sons of Jacob, there was to come that seed. Didn't know yet that it was going to be through Judah. It was not going to be through Joseph. But what he did know was that he was to come. And he did not lose his family identity, did not lose his identity as the children, as one of the children of promise. And so it is significant that while all of this Egyptian stuff had been forced upon him, had been placed upon him, when his son firstborn was born, called him Manasseh, which means causing to forget. And as we read that, for God said, he hath made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. Apparently Joseph was not seeing his success in the way that others would have seen it. He is not recognizing the accolades of the world as to what he was there for. He had recognized that whatever it was that he had was all encompassed in the purpose and in the wisdom of God. And he saw it for himself. And notice, forget all my toil and all my father's house. He has given me this son. He has given me this descendant. He has given me this assurance that my line will continue. He has made me to forget the fact that my own brothers sold me into slavery, at least 10 of them did. And the fact was that it would be these 10 that he would come to deal with later. Not only that, but there was still another son. And we're made to see, even in this with the name Manasseh, that his longing was still for his identity with the Lord's people. So that was the gift of his son, and it had made him to forget even all that had been done, to forget the treachery, to forget what his brothers had done. The second son was named Ephraim, and the meaning of Ephraim is double fruit, double fruit. And notice what he says here quite simply. For the name of the second called he Ephraim, for God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. He didn't call it the land of his success. He didn't say, not only this, on top of all of this wealth and all of this glory and all of this recognition and all that has come to me here in the land of Egypt. He didn't call it success. He called it affliction. He saw it as the affliction of the world. And indeed, that was exactly what it was to him. Oh my, how different is this from the thinking that would normally come to us? And so it is that he finds himself in that way. The years of plenty were over. The dearth, the times of famine set in, and the stage was being set that was the divine intent. It was not, and that Egypt and the surrounding countries should be spared from famine. All of this stage was set so that the word of this would filter back into the land of Canaan, where dwelt the father and his brothers, and they would hear of it. And Jacob would dispatch his sons with money, go to Egypt and buy corn for us, preserve us from starving. And that was, after all, the purpose of God in bringing these things about. Our purpose, as far as being in this world today, is not that we become of the world, but that we are delivered from the world. And this has been accomplished through Jesus Christ. It was that the family of Joseph and his father might be delivered unto him, spared, because that through him the Christ line would be kept intact. Consider the Christ and the route that he chose to exaltation. Joseph's route to exaltation brought him through some troublous times. Jesus Christ was described in the Old Testament scriptures as being a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And indeed, as he went through this world, it was not the flowery bed of ease that men are found so often looking for. We find our comforts and our consolations only in him, the only true ones. Man thinks themselves, and look at the appearance of success of Joseph in the land of Egypt. But then look at the end of the Egyptians before God is done with them. And the fact is that this, in Joseph, we see something that certainly again draws our attention to the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. He not only was an example in many ways, setting forth the character of Christ in his life, but likewise he typified Christ in many of the things that he did, and ultimately he will come to the manifestation even of forgiveness to the ones that sold him into slavery and broke his father's heart. And so indeed, we would look to these things and rejoice in that which we are given through the life of Joseph and what we witness in his exaltation. May the Lord bless you. Just now is my prayer.